KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, it's Elvis Mitchell. You know me. I host The Treatment here at KCRW. Stand by. We're going to start the podcast in about 5 seconds from now, but let me ask you your support because, hey, you know you're listening. I know you're listening because you can hear my voice. Why are you holding on to that money? You're just going to go waste it at Starbucks anyway. We do original programming here. We get the best people who come to talk to you and to me. So send us a few bucks. In fact, send us 10 bucks by texting KCRW to the number 20222. Right? You got that? All right. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. When I saw the film Out of the Furnace a couple of weeks ago, the first thing I thought was, what feels like perhaps a sprawl is a really densely layered character piece that reminded me of William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying. Its director and screenwriter, Scott Cooper, who also did Crazy Hearts a couple of years ago, is sitting across from me. I'm thrilled to have him here. Thank you so much, Scott.
That's a real pleasure, Elvis. As someone who's been a longtime admirer of your work, it's a real honor to be here.
For the audience, tell them a little bit what the movie's about, because I want them to go see it.
Well, the movie is about many things, but it's truly about us as Americans and these past 5 turbulent years that we've experienced. A crumbling economy, fighting wars on 2 fronts in Iraq and Afghanistan, our soldiers returning and suffering post-traumatic stress disorder and having a very difficult time assimilating back into life, and the fact that we live in a violent nation. It's also about a man, played by Christian Bale, who's a very, very good man, who is beset on all sides by this relentless fate, who, when he emerges from prison, he's met with a great deal of tragedy and loss. His brother, played by Casey Affleck, who is reeling from the torment and the horrors that he's seen in war, and having a difficult time finding work in the dying Rust Belt town and economy that's crumbling, gets caught up in a very nefarious crime ring led by a horrific Woody Harrelson. And without spoiling much of the denouement, Christian goes on a journey to help honor the familial obligations that he's taken on so heavily from now being the titular member of the family.
I couldn't help but think, as I was watching this, though, specifically that book, William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying, comes to mind because it moves from the gothic to the funny, but it's all about this family who can't help getting in each other's way. And there are a number of narratives in that, as there are in this.
It's funny you bring that up because my father was taught by William Faulkner for 2 years at the University of Virginia, the only 2 years that Mr. Faulkner taught. So from a very young age, I was introduced and steeped in everything Faulkner. And his work permeates certainly Crazy Heart. I think about his novels frequently, how they truly examine the human condition, the human spirit. And in particular, that novel, which is one of my favorite novels, with several points of view, and we get the same thing here. We get the point of view from Christian Bale's character, Russell Bayes. We get a point of view from his brother, Rodney Bayes, played by Casey Affleck. And of course, we get a point of view from Woody Harrelson's character. And typically, you don't see that in film. Of course, that, like many other elements in this film, are a risk. But it felt to me that it would engage the viewer more deeply, in a more interesting fashion, and hopefully they would understand where each character was coming from and where they were going so that when they all met, you truly understood them in a way that perhaps you wouldn't have another film. And I can really attribute it not only to that novel, but to many of his works, or Flannery O'Connor, or The Russians, more recently Cormac McCarthy, his work. They've all, I guess I've curated from them all.
But the reason I brought that book up in particular, and even I think we say this about Crazy Hearts, too, is that as we move from character to character, we enter those characters' narratives, which I feel like in a very short span is something that's become specific to you.
Yeah, it's interesting because I, for better or for worse, never attended film school. never read some of those screenwriting manuals.
No kidding.
No, I haven't. I tend to write from personal experience, from research, and from imagination. And of course, then being influenced by not only other filmmakers whom I admire and certainly their style, but also these particular authors that I've just mentioned. And the point of view typically is told from the protagonist only. And in Crazy Heart, you can certainly see that it's largely from Jeff Bridges' point of view, though we do also see Maggie Gyllenhaal's
but
point
when
of view.
She's on screen, though, again, and I want to get back to this between Crazy Heart and Out of the Ferns, each time we're looking at that one character's story, Zoe Saldana, Willem Dafoe, when we're with that character, it's from that point of view.
That's right. And it's a little bit unorthodox. And
how did the style come to you?
Well, I think probably just from having read a great deal. I don't watch a lot of television, and I tend to watch a lot of cinema from a different era, or believe it or not, even I tend to watch more European or world cinema than most anything. And
because obviously the Dardenne brothers are
well, the Dardenne brothers are major influences. I certainly don't do it as well as they do, but I really, really respond to their work. And And you tend to just be influenced by many of these things. And again, I didn't attend film school or read these screenwriting manuals in which you would open a film with a protagonist and you would follow that protagonist all the way through. I happened in this film to open with the antagonist, Woody Harrelson, and his character in a way that for many is shocking.
And it goes through all these things. It starts off as being almost like a weird family argument, and you're kind of laughing because it's so out of hand. So fast.
That's right. It's when I sat down to write the screenplay, and I knew that scene was going to be the first scene that I wrote.
You knew that from the outset that was going to be the first scene.
Oh, I did, for sure. And many times when you're cutting the film or you're screening the film and you see that it's jarring, many people say to you, wow, well, Scott, maybe we shouldn't open the film that way. It's a little too much for the audience to have to take in and process so early. They've just sat down with their drink and their popcorn. And I said, well, that's precisely why I'm doing it. Not only are you subverting expectations, but I was trying to establish this bedrock of menace that kind of hovers through the narrative, but also any time that Woody Harrelson's character is on screen, much like the dorsal fin or John Williams' score in Jaws, you know nothing good is going to come of it. So that was always my intent, and it was the first scene that I wrote, and because it's such a personal screenplay, it really I just regurgitated it quickly and painfully, but cathartically. And quite frankly, it all goes back to just the many hours of poring over Faulkner's work or Eudora Welty or Flannery O'Connor or the Russians, just on and on, people who've influenced me greatly.
It's a treatment, by the way. My guest is writer-director Scott Cooper. His second film, Following Crazy Heart, is Out of the Furnace. Oh, see, that's interesting, too, and that feels like something that comes to me from Russian literature, which is about dealing with family responsibility.
That's right.
And in both films,
Crazy
Heart,
right,
and in Out of the Furnace, which almost feels like a Faulkner title.
Well, it's interesting. When I first sent the screenplay to Sam Shepard, one of my literary heroes.
Who's in the film, by the way.
Sam Shepard, who's in the film and who's one of my favorite actors, and clearly I have read a great deal of his work. I get a call from Sam, who's in Paris, and he says, Scott, this is Sam Shepard. And of course, I'm a little struck, and he says, this is one of the best titles for a film I've read in a long time. I'm in. And I thought, wow. I mean, I'll never forget it. I was in New York City, and to get a call like that from Sam Shepard, one of your heroes. So I was struck that he was moved by the title, because titling a film is sometimes difficult. I think audiences are accustomed to one, two, or three word titles that really sum up the film, and I wanted a title that would reveal itself over the course of the narrative, and it's both literal and figurative when you see the film.
You say something for Crazy Heart. Titles are both kind of illustrative and elusive.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the film is about familial obligation and responsibility. You see Jeff Bridges, who in Crazy Heart is irresponsible not only with his son, his estranged son, but also with his career and with almost any relationship that he has apart from his relationship to the bottle. And in this particular film, Christian Bale assumes the paterfamilias title, and he feels very responsible not only to his younger brother, Rodney, played by Casey Affleck, but also to the town, this vanishing way of life, and the fact that he is a dying breed of American man. And truly the film, to me, represents the best and the worst of America. And I think we were all ushered in with a great deal of hope in 2008 when the movie set. And unfortunately for many people, as we see, that hope has not been met.
We could actually say, by the way, it's the tree I'm talking to Scott Cooper, his new film as writer-director, is out of the furnace. You could have made these characters, in fact, archetypal, and for a second, when we meet each of them, they kind of are.
Correct.
Almost like hitting the nail right in the head, but then you kind of move off from that. To create a second movie with so many people in it, I found it to be a really kind of powerful thing to watch, but also keeping all that emotional action clear on screen. How long did it take to write?
Well, as I was, I'll never forget it, staring at that blinking cursor for the first time in my very spare office in which I write, and I knew that it was going to be personal because the film also deals with the loss of a sibling. I lost a sibling as well.
What happened?
My sister died when I was young. She was 3 years older, at 7 years old, came home from school with a high fever, and 3 days later, she was dead from a very rare form of meningitis. So you never see, I have to say, I mean, it's you see your parents go through that, and you see your older brother go through that, and those things just tend to stay with you. It was very painful, as I said, but cathartic process, and I wrote it very quickly, in probably 20, 22, 23 days of writing.
How long have you been sitting in your head, though, before you started work on it?
Oh, for a very long time. I mean, you tend to want to write from personal experience. There was a lot of personal experience in Crazy Heart. And Elvis, you live with this every day. As Eddie Vedder said to me, who worked with me on the film, he said, Scott, if you don't write these things down, they'll just eat you alive.
The regional feels make each of these movies different. Mm. There's kind of more of a laconic feel to Crazy Heart.
That's
even
right.
Though you write movies about talkers, which I love, and how people can't help but get themselves in trouble once they open their mouths, which is also a very Flannery O'Connor, Welty Faulkner thing as well. But in these movies feel very different to me in terms of place. Mm. And I wonder about that because the setting for Crazy Heart is very different from the setting for Out of the Furnace. And I just wondered, because you mentioned at the Academy screening where I saw the movie, that was critical to you to shoot there.
It was critical that I shot Crazy Heart in Santa Fe, Texas, and Los Angeles, because I'd written it for those places specifically. And when I sat down to write this, the town that I'm chronicling is Braddock, Pennsylvania, who's fallen on very, very difficult times, a steel town in western Pennsylvania. But in the same region, same mountain range, the Appalachians that I grew up in Virginia. And I grew up a grandson of a coal miner in the coal fields of Virginia. And those places are indelible. And when I was touring with Crazy Heart, I had been reading a great deal about Braddock, Pennsylvania, in the New York Times. I'd seen the mayor chronicled on 60 Minutes. And while I was in Pittsburgh, I wanted to visit Braddock. I had a day off, and I went over and was just struck by this town, not only how cinematographic and photogenic and that it dripped with atmosphere, but that the people that remained were filled with courage and resilience when so many had left at one time. I think it was 20,000 people. Now it's about 2,000, 80% African American. And it struck me as a place that would be a great setting for a film, and reminded me of all the small towns I lived in Virginia. And when it came time to shoot, I said, I'm either going to make it in Braddock, Pennsylvania, or I'm not going to make the film. The studio, trying to be very fiscally responsible, and they were wonderful partners, said to me, well, it might be less expensive to shoot it in Massachusetts. And I said, well, that's possible. I said, but I've written it for this particular town, and it's an important character in the film, just as important as anybody else. And they, of course, agreed, and we were able to shoot there. The town embraced us with open arms, and I think it really imbues not only Christian Bale and Willem Dafoe and Casey Affleck and Woody Harrelson and the rest of the cast with a sense of place, but also the caterers, the cinematographer, the production design. When you're working in a town like that, you need to do less in general. And that's the hallmark of my work. If I have any type of signature, it's not about Scott Cooper at all. It's not about how clever Scott Cooper is with a camera, but it's about a sense of place, how it affects the characters, because we're all affected by our environments. And it was really important for Christian Bale to feel like he was a part of that culture. And Christian worked alongside the steelworkers until he became one. It was uncanny to watch Christian do what he does in the film, and you say to yourself, he could have easily been one of these men. And it, so it really helped the actors, I think, with their performances. It certainly helped me tell the story, and it helped every department head that I dealt with on a daily basis. And I think we're all grateful that we were able to shoot there.
We have to take a break. I'm so glad you're here, Scott. My guest is Scott Cooper, whose new film as writer-director is Out of the Furnace. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Jump into a new mode of music discovery with the KCRW Music Mine. It's our first iPad app dedicated entirely to music exploration. The Music Mine brings you an interactive experience with a constantly evolving galaxy of audio, video, and photos. Discover by artist, by DJ, or by song, and easily share the music you love with friends. The KCRW Music Mine. Dig into it on your iPad. More info at kcrw.com.
Welcome back. We're talking about the new film, Out of the Furnace, with writer-director Scott Cooper. It's The Treatment, and Altman came up earlier. I guess that must be part of this for you as well, isn't it, Robert Altman, the way he used each character to sort of advance narrative? And you have two films that, that in fact, seem like they're digressive when they're discursive. You're smiling.
Well, it's true. Again, I couldn't afford to go to film school, so my film school was sitting in the dark watching Laserdiscs or VHS or later DVDs of my favorite directors and watching their films with the sound off and how they told the story with the camera.
With the sound off?
Yeah, with the mise-en-scene, how they moved the camera, more importantly, when they didn't move it, how they would tell this story, because I always think that a really wonderful and beautifully told story, whether it's in Italian or Russian or French, and if you're watching it with the sound off, 80% of it will come through, even if you don't speak the language. And that's really how I taught myself. So watching a lot of McCabe and Miss Miller, or then Shortcuts, which is a very important film for me.
This very much feels like Shortcuts to me.
It's a really important film for me.
Even that sense of the way Shortcut goes from people being trapped indoors to being outside, that difference between... And that's important for you too, isn't it?
Oh,
the way people function inside versus outside.
It's
I mean, that's very specific to you.
It's very specific in both films. And you look at the work of the searing realism of William Friedkin, or certainly the kind of lyricism or poetic nature of Terrence Malick. When I set out to make the film and I sat down with Christian, or I sat down with Masanobu Takinagi, who's my Japanese cinematographer, and I inundated him with, I don't know, 200 or 300 photographs from Dorothea Lange and Robert Frank and Walker Evans. And I said to him, and it sounds pretentious now that I'm about to say it, but I said, truly, what I'm striving for is the kind of classicism of John Ford, but the truthfulness of John Cassavetes. And whether you're Japanese or Italian or French or American, you understand that, if you understand film at all. And he got exactly what I wanted, that kind of searing realism that you see in these performances, but also with a backdrop that feels very American, but at the same time universal, because I've had people who are Russian or French or Italian who have said, thank you for making a European film, although it's very American.
But I have to ask you, because this occurs to me, and I meant to ask you when I met you, what is it about the outdoors? I mean, there's a sense of ominousness in exteriors in both of these films. Talk to me about that.
Well, I mentioned it a bit earlier, but we're all shaped by our environment. Whether you grow up in the coal fields of Virginia or the plains of Nebraska or the mountains of Colorado, they shape the way you move, they shape the way you think, they shape your skin pallor, your skin tone, your hands, all of those sort of things that I tend to document in my films, that gives you an intimate insight into the characters. Because as an actor, characterization behavior and psychology is the most important thing to me. I probably could be more plot-driven, but I'm not. I tend to want to explore the
I don't know, like I said before,
the verities of the human heart, as Faulkner would say.
Yeah,
right?
But what I said before was I think what feels like it's not a plot is really a very specific plot. I mean, it's we so fasten into the character, and I'm guessing part of that comes from you basically sort of growing up really training as an actor, that you're writing for an actor's voice, for a character first, and that's what makes sense to you as
a writer. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I have such great reverence and respect for actors that I pay a great deal of attention to actors and to human behavior more specifically. And I watch a lot of documentaries because that's, for the most part, certainly older ones, Harlan County, USA, being one of my favorites, and Woody's character's name is Harlan DeGroat, and of course I've taken it from Barbara Kopple's landmark documentary. But if you watch a film like that, and of course I grew up in that region, you're watching unadulterated behavior. And that's the type of behavior that I'm looking for that you would see in Cassavetes' work. And it's at times unconventional. It doesn't hew to tropes or formulas, but is hopefully searing.
Did you find that as a young viewer you kind of rejected a conventional narrative, that it didn't serve a purpose for you?
I seem to, yeah, for better or for worse. And perhaps which is why I would respond more to European cinema. I tend to be moved more and engaged more by filmmakers who don't so much hew to convention, and that you feel are making a very personal film and don't feel the need to please.
My guest who put together this, he just mentioned an incredible cast for his new film, Out of the Furnace. The great title, by the way, is Scott Cooper. It's The Treatment. You've written two movies. You give a couple of characters who are self-destructive and kind of these spectacularly flamboyant entrances. And it's interesting because these are guys who are all old enough to know way better, and they're still moths attracted to the flame.
Well, it's interesting because you, especially with Woody Harrelson's character, he's so unpredictable, but so is Casey Affleck's character, that it can become combustionable. And you never quite know what they're going to do, because we've seen in Woody's character what he does in the opening of the film in a very public setting. You can only imagine what he would do in a private setting. And many times we see him in very private, intimate settings. And Elvis, you know the result.
But we also see, too, in those scenes that he's not just impulsive. There's a plan to the self-destructive.
Always.
Because you think from that first scene when we're watching, oh, this guy's basically completely...
psychotic.
Yes, but completely like open to impulse. But no, he plots. He lives in this. It's not just that he's given to these rages, that he's fulfilled by doing these things.
Well, and you have to ask yourself as a writer and as a director, what happened in that man's childhood or in his adolescence that led him to this place? What happened in Casey Affleck's adolescence and his childhood that led him to this place? Because we're all shaped by our experiences. And you know that Casey Affleck's character as an Iraqi vet has seen things, Elvis, that you and I will never know what that's like.
But in both of these movies, I think it's just kind of fascinating that adult behavior doesn't really influence anybody else.
That's right.
I just find it really, it kind of realized through the women, through both the women in Crazy Heart and here, that the women feel like they have to find a future for themselves, but they're still trapped in these worlds with these men who cannot see a way out.
Right, and you don't choose whom you fall in love with. Those things just happen. But
that's the difference, I think, between Crazy Heart and Out of the Furnace, that Maggie Gyllenhaal.
And Zoe Saldana, right.
Yeah, I mean, in Crazy Heart, she makes that choice, or she can't get out of that choice, but there's a different kind of choice that comes in the bear that still does some damage. And then that's why I'm trying to juxtapose these, because they're two very different movies, even though they're
distant cousins, yeah.
They're threats that hold them together. So there's a DNA that combines them.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right. Well, you never want to, whether you're an actor or certainly a film director, you never want to repeat yourself, but you still like to discover some of the same themes. Tonally, Crazy Heart is filled with warmth and humor.
And then the light of the Southwest, which becomes a character itself, too.
Correct. Out of the Furnace, you're living in the leaden skies of Pennsylvania, certainly a darker way of life, characters who are equally struggling, like Jeff Bridges' character, but there's a sense of fatalism that kind of hovers around them.
But there's a dawning sense of fatalism in Crazy Heart.
There is,
it's not immediate right at the very beginning as it is in this film.
Correct. And you see in both films men who suffer from addiction. Jeff Bridges' character, Woody's character, right? All things that...
You can say Casey's character because he's addicted to the violence.
And adrenaline.
Yeah.
That he's seen in the streets of Tikrit or Baghdad or Fallujah. And then he comes home to sleepy Pennsylvania with no prospects, and he still needs that adrenaline. And you can see him falling into this sort of torment without it. And he seeks it and needs it, and it costs him his life.
What was it like the first time you got all your actors together? Did you do a table read of the script? I just wondered.
No, I tend not to do a table read because you'll have producers in a studio who don't like what they hear and want you to change things.
Is that something you learn as an actor for
sure.
Just not to do?
And you find that actors tend to, some will overact at a table read, some will underact, and it's never as thrilling, unless you're doing a comedy, as you would hope. On top of that, I don't particularly love to over-rehearse my actors or rehearse them really on the day at all. We do a great deal of investigative text work prior to shooting. I meet with each actor and for hours and hours, days on end, and we talk about backstory, behavior, motivation, their socioeconomic class, their levels of education, what novel might sit on their bedstand. If it's a novel or is it a magazine, do they subscribe to magazines? What is their relationship to their neighbors? So when they exit the house and they're walking to their truck or their car, do they look for neighbor John? Or do they make a beeline for their car? All these things that have a very cumulative effect. So that when on the day, I never want to say, wow, I'm rehearsing something. That was amazing. I wish I had shot that. And infuse the actors with some electricity. When they know the camera's rolling and you're burning film and they haven't rehearsed it. And it also doesn't become stale. Too many times you can, I think, drive an actor in a performance into the ground and they run dry. And when you're dealing with such emotionally charged and difficult material as we were with Out of the Furnace, it's important that they're truly living in the moment and discovering it with you as we're shooting it. And then you give them adjustments, minor notes or major notes. And because I am an actor, I have such great respect for them that you want to create an environment that's safe for Christian Bale to take chances or for Casey Affleck to fail and to do things that he never thought that he would do. Because when you do that, that's when you find the magic. And it's worked for me on both films, and I will continue to work that way. And some actors probably don't like to work that way. They like to come in.
Have you found that to be the case?
No, I've fortunately gotten the actors that I've wanted for my films, and they love this process.
Okay.
Because they find that they're really discovering it and finding it, and they've done all of this investigative text work before, so they really know who these characters are. And when you have a cast that's as talented as this, it's like you're in the Kentucky Derby and you're on one of the great horses and you maybe give them a little bit of rein here or you pull back here, a little bit of spur here or the whip if you need to, and they're so responsive. These are the best actors in the world.
But this self-destructive thing, I just wonder, that comes from you, because I even think about seeing...
Many people in my life that have self-destructive tendencies, people that you've grown up with or that have lived in your... family, or because I draw from personal experience, those sort of things, and
you saw me in both these films. I mean, between having Casey and Woody in the same shot, or when we see Colin Farrell and Jeff Bridges,
sure.
You think these guys are the worst people for each other. They shouldn't.
That's right, but they're drawn to one another. You'll see in Out of the Furnace that, without giving too much of it away, Woody Harrelson sees a little bit of Casey Affleck in himself. And we notice in the denouements, in the final moments of the film, that we see that recognition. And that there were three or four times in the film that I really wanted to humanize Woody's character, and that's one of them. Where you understand that what he's done in the past, Woody's character in the film, that relates to Casey's character, that he understood who he was and saw a kindred spirit. And that what's happened between these two men is really too bad.
I'm sorry, Scott, we're out of time. Thanks so much for doing this.
No, Elvis, thank you. It was really wonderful. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My guest is writer-director Scott Cooper, whose new film is writer-director, and I urge you to go see it, is Out of the Furnace. Our recording engineer, who also mixes the show, is Melissa Morton, is edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I'm not Russell. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.